Cafe manager Deborah Foster was packing up after a long day when the mother of the bride came to her beachside coffee house begging for help. "We were just closing up, and the bride's mother comes running up to me really upset, and they said they'd tried to set up the wedding on the beach, but the winds and the rain were ridiculous. She asked to use our undercover area to host the ceremony, so we did what we could and managed to get the 30 or 40 guests under the shelter and set up pretty quickly. They were such a lovely couple, and we were so happy to be able to step in and help them at the last minute." Well, have you ever attended a wedding that needed some last-minute adjustments? The wedding dress was torn, maybe the rings were misplaced, maybe the groom showed up a little intoxicated. You probably found that quite fascinating. But have you ever been part of a wedding party facing the same situation? Not so fascinating then, hey? You might have grown some gray hairs. Well, today we hear that familiar gospel story about the wedding at Cana. When the wine runs out, Jesus performs a miracle and rescues the celebration. Jesus literally saves the day. For those of you who are more familiar with the Gospel of John, you'll realize that the Gospel writer is pretty selective in choosing Jesus' miracle stories. I mean, there are only seven miracles in John, far fewer than in the Synoptic Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. In John, there are fewer miracles. Moreover, these miracles are presented differently. They're presented as signs, events designed not so much to entertain, but to provoke faith, so that in the writer's words, we might believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing, we might have life in his name. As far as today's sign goes, it gives us quite a lot to think about. Lots to think about concerning Jesus, and lots to think about concerning the life he brings. Now, that the sign endorses life is pretty evident. Jesus provides refreshments so that the celebration can continue. Now, it is a strange miracle, in a sense. I mean, of all the human needs that were evident in Cana, it would seem that providing wine for a wedding would be, well, kind of low on anyone's priority list. As one commentator noted, compared with the needs of the desperately sick or seriously disabled that Jesus usually healed, or even with the hunger of the crowds he fed, more wine for a party, well, it seems more like a luxury than a need. Certainly, it would have been a social disgrace to run out of wine on such an occasion, but the family is evidently not poor. They have servants and expensive stone jars. Could they not send out to buy more wine? It seems we must recognize that Jesus does not so much meet a need as supply an extravagance. Think about that. Jesus doesn't just meet a need, but supplies an extravagance, which I think helps us understand that God is as concerned about our joy, our happiness, as much as our mere survival. The wine will allow the couple to begin their marriage without shame or embarrassment. The wine will provide the needed social lubrication to ensure that alliances form with in-laws and that the marriage will receive continuing support throughout the years. Jesus' sign endorses life. But it does more than that. Jesus' sign, Jesus' miracle, validates his identity. Wine has always been a symbol of God's blessing and provision from creation. As the psalmist reminds us, he makes grass grow for the cattle and plants for people to cultivate, bringing forth food from the earth, wine that gladdens human hearts, oil to make their faces shine, and bread that sustains their hearts. Wine is also part of the imagery associated with the fulfillment of God's purposes and the time when God will redeem his people. Indeed, the two images which express the extravagant joy of the Messianic age are the wedding banquet and the abundance of wine. I don't know what the teetotalers are going to do with that. The prophet Isaiah foretells that day when the Lord Almighty will prepare a feast of rich food for all the peoples, a banquet of aged wine, the best of meats, and the finest of wines. Then he will swallow up death forever. The sovereign Lord will wipe away the tears from all faces. With this in mind, we can see that when Jesus transforms the water in those ceremonial stone jars into wine, Jesus is doing something highly symbolic. Jesus is proclaiming the fulfillment of God's promises. That MC's astonished statement to the bridegroom about saving the best for last surely refers to the wine he's just tasted. But at a deeper level, this statement is also about Jesus. In this sign, we recognize that God has indeed saved, up till last, his very best gift to Israel and to the world. God's best gift was not in Israel's past when he gave Moses the law or Israel the land. God has kept the best wine until the coming of Jesus. Jesus' sign validates his purpose and identity. And at the end of today's reading, we are told that his disciples believed in him. They believed in him. So Jesus' sign endorses life, Jesus' sign validates his identity, and Jesus' sign reveals our role as servants who work alongside him in this new age. I mean, I find it instructive that Jesus didn't just say the word. I mean, he did in other miracles, right? Jesus didn't just say the word and the water turned into a silky cabernet. Instead, Jesus gave orders to his servants to fill the stone jars with water, and then to draw out the water, and then to bring it to the MC. Instead of doing it all himself, Jesus chooses to work with some servants. Later, he will work with his disciples, all of them people who are committed to doing whatever Jesus says. I mean, it must have sounded like a pretty mundane request. Can you fill those jars with water? But they did what Jesus asked them to do, and abundant blessings followed their actions. Not that they themselves were rained upon by God's blessings, but that they were used. They were instruments used to bless others. I wonder what might happen when we choose to live and respond as obedient servants, doing whatever Jesus asks us to do. Could it be that when we listen to Jesus and fill out that form to provide that monthly gift for that charity that God's put on our heart, that this act will provide the necessary encouragement to keep that charity's director at work in that position, that it might sustain her spirit to continue engaging in an important but difficult ministry? We may never know. But what is clear from this story is that when we follow Jesus' directions, that blessings will follow. Blessings will be poured down upon those around us. A young couple, their families, their entire village is blessed, all because people decide to actually do what Jesus says. Well, today we encounter a familiar story that maybe entertains us. But when we think about it, it also asks a lot from us. I mean, Jesus' sign endorses life. So will we be a people who dare to celebrate, to host our own parties, feasts, and banquets because Jesus has liberated us from a fear of life and a fear of death? I mean, it's easier to remain grim and tight-fisted, right? Jesus' sign confirms his identity. Some so will we dare to believe that he is the one in whom God's greatest plans for our lives and our world are finally expressed. It's easier to remain agnostic and uncommitted. Jesus' sign invites us to work in his service, to labor in his service, and to be instruments through whom God's abundant life will be unleashed. So will we dare listen to God's mundane directions, expecting lavish blessings to result? It's much easier to remain self-serving and skeptical. Well, by God's grace, may we also, like those first disciples, be given faith to believe. And may we be given faith to follow, to obey. And may God's extravagant blessings be lavished on our communities. Amen and amen.